despite the fact that you might have heard rumors otherwise, the show did not die with the game. Ladies and gentlemen, welcome to Inside the Game, episode 80. DJ Wheat joined, as always, by Thorzane, Suppy, and In Control. We're here today for a funeral, a burial. No, I'm just kidding. What's up, guys? How's it going? Obviously, a rough week at StarCraft, kind of ups and downs. We're going to talk about all of it this week. Talk about all of it. But first,
Everything
you've ever wanted to know about a dying game, but we're afraid to ask. It's all going to happen this week on Inside the Game. So before we get started, hello, gentlemen, Thorzane.
Hello, gentlemen, Marcus, DJ Wheat, Graham.
Can we make that a thing now? Can we always say that at the beginning?
Gentlemen, hello, gentlemen.
Gentlemen, Suppy, how are you on this? Good, gentlemen, Wheat.
I'm good. I just finished a stream session. I've been streaming. Today I streamed, I think 10 and a half hours.
Wow.
So I've been really
like pain user
streaming
level
a lot.
Hours and stuff.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It's He's been up and downs, playing well, playing bad, playing ladder, playing 2v2s, playing arcade. Just like playing StarCraft, basically. Streaming
nice.
It. That's what I've been doing. Like,
what do you
basically
play on the
it.
Arcade?
I've been like trying to find new games, but it's been like Nexus Wars, Ice Banning Escape, and like what else? We played Desert Strike, Micro Arena.
Hey, you should play that new StarCraft MMO or whatever. Did you guys see that?
What's it called?
Well,
isn't that the one
Kickstarter?
Yeah, the Kickstarter one.
Yeah.
Doesn't that seem a bit like, do they need $80,000 to make a StarCraft 2 custom game?
Yes, they do.
No, they need $80,000 to get paid to make a StarCraft 2 custom game.
Well, see, yeah, I feel like they've already like finished it. They just like want money.
No,
they
sort of have a foundation. Like, you can go in and play sort of like a campaign. I don't know, you know. I think it's to keep it going and the development going. So I don't know. The weird thing is that I read that the guys that created that got hired by Blizzard. And maybe it was just one of those things where someone in chat was like, yeah, those guys totally got hired by Blizzard. It was awesome. And then I just picked
it's that, I'm guessing.
It was, maybe.
It's like super against the law for them to ask for a Kickstarter as Blizzard employees.
Well, right.
Blizzard
That's
gameplay.
Why I was like, wait a second. How'd that
You're work? Quadrupling off of this game, aren't you? And they're like, yes, we are.
Suppy, hello? Gentleman Suppy, hello?
Hello, Gentleman Marcus.
I like it.
Did you watch any movies this week? Get enlightened at all?
No, I didn't get enlightened this week.
Of course not.
I mean, it was all watching all the esports content
true.
This weekend.
Tell us what you actually did, Sophie. Tell us what your weekend was. What does a kid like you with zero culture do?
I watched StarCraft and Dota, and I streamed.
And had an Austin Powers marathon.
No.
No? Don't lie to us.
No.
All right, it was a good week.
I watched this movie called Shrek 1. Has anyone seen that? It's about an alien.
No, I've seen that a long time ago.
Okay, good. Good for you.
Hello, Jeff, gentlemen in control.
Gentlemen Wheat, good evening.
Robinson. How goes it? How's the week?
Good. I mean, I'm glad we're talking about the rough week of StarCraft, so I'll leave that to there. But outside of that, I guess the cool thing I can report that I'm happy about is I went twice to go meet up. Like, it doesn't fit in Twitter, so it sounded weird. I actually tweeted that I met with at a professional Warhammer 40,000 training facility, which is like a weird way to word that it's a group of guys that are super passionate about the game, trying to make money off it, but also they play it. It's hard to call it professionally because you don't really make money off of playing Warhammer, but that is like their main thing. That's what they do.
Right.
So they're really cool. They're called frontlinegaming.org, and they make money by painting their, you know, offering painting work. And then they also sell Warhammer stuff in their shop. But anyways, I went and hung out with them, and I'm working out my army, and it's going to get competitive, and it's being painted right now, and I'm really excited about the future of that. And then, yes, I see someone in the chat say, you're such a nerd, and that's actually true. Like, I realize,
honestly, like, some of the paintings, just to say, like, some of the work that gets done on these things, like, nerd or not, it's fucking amazing. When you see what they start off as, that's pretty. That's
their
pretty
talents beyond mine. That's definitely why I'm paying for it. Like some people are like, "Well, I'm just paying yourself." It's like, no, you don't understand. Like, I've been collecting Terran since I was 12 years old, so 15 years. So these guys are like strangely, I'm obsessed with them. And one time I painted them when I was younger, and I was like, "And now your arm's gonna be red." And then this one will be like, it'll be different. It'll be like spiny yellow with like purple here, because that's cool. And it looked fucking horrible. It looked like a child's, you know, like, all right, class, now paint your Terranids. And we're all like painting them and stuff. And I can't do that. So I'm paying a bunch of money to some really talented people to do it. But so you'll definitely hear and see more about that. That's the really exciting thing for me.
As a guy who likes to read colorful picture novels, I appreciate having a passion for anything. So you go in control. Thank but you. We are going to segue over to this week in StarCraft, and what a week it has been. We're going to rewind because obviously we've got WCS to talk about. We've got the upcoming event to talk about, the season 2 finals. But if we rewind a week, we have to start looking back at Wednesday and Thursday and what happened at the end. And we're going to start off with probably the first and the biggest thing that actually came out of it, and that was the almost nonchalant tweet that there was not going to be StarCraft II at Columbus.
Yeah.
Immediate reactions. Anyone want to take that one?
Suppy Thorzane?
Fuck Slasher.
It's like, I don't know how that's relevant to this, but damn
knee jerk response.
It seems
Slasher.
Appropriate.
I mean, obviously, it was really sad news, but yeah, I felt really bad about it. But I think maybe it's not. Maybe it'll give the opportunity for other organizations to come in. I know DreamHack's coming, so I mean, there might be something to fill in the void. Hopefully. Or maybe MLG has something really, really super secret planned, and they're just trying to troll us, but probably not. But
what was that thing about Red Bull?
There was like
that
some
said that they were like going to try and
so
do some.
Let's so first off, a series of events, because Thorzane, yes, you're right, this does have relevance to the story, and that MLG tweeted no StarCraft 2 at Columbus. I believe there was a tweet from Cloaken back to MLG that was like, why? And then there was also a tweet from, don't you love it that we're getting all of our news from tweet? But there was a tweet from Scoots who said that that it was potentially MLG and Red Bull both asked for license, but Red Bull got the license. And then Cloaken came back and said, yo, MLG didn't ask for shit. They actually didn't ask for a license
Cloaken?
That weekend. Cloaken is one of the community managers.
The community manager,
really, at Blizzard, right. So he did say that MLG did not ask for a license that weekend. And that and now it's been, I guess, leaked that Red Bull had asked for a license and did receive one this weekend. I don't believe we have additional details on this. But, the big things that came out from it. A, MLG sort of nonchalantly releasing this information. And we'll talk about that one. B, what effect does this have on North America StarCraft overall? And I think C, just interestingly enough, like, what do you guys think is going to replace it?
Well, I don't know if I can remember all that, but just to say, like...
Well, God damn it.
I think part of the pain and the hurt that the community experienced was in the way that it was delivered. And it was funny because it's...
Right.
It was very predictable that Adam Apicella and Sundance, like, following the backlash from this, were tweeting, like, with friends like these, and I can't believe the short memories, and, like, God, think of the things we did for you guys. Like, that's kind of MLG's attitude, is, like, aghast and surprise and anger when people are upset with the way they handle things. But I'm going to be honest with you. I mean, there's no if here. We were dumped over Twitter, guys. Like, that's actually a fucking horrible way to do it. If you wanna do PR work, you come out with an announcement on your official website where you're like, look, it wasn't able to be done on this weekend. We're really sorry. We've had an amazing string of MLGs with StarCraft. We're not saying that we won't have StarCraft in future events, but for this weekend, we simply can't do it, and we want you guys to know we love and thank you for your time, and hopefully we can come right back to hosting another amazing tournament. But instead, it's like a half-assed weird Sundance tweet that's like, that, like you said, it was very casual, very like, no StarCraft maybe at Columbus. Like, let me just throw those dice out there and see how you kids handle it. And I didn't like it either because I honestly, I saw right through it. They did it during the International 3 week, so that this is the peak of like so many things, but one of those is like, look at Dota. Dota is the best. Wow, StarCraft cannot compare because we unfortunately also had alignments with our tournaments at the same week, and we got clobbered. So it's very good on the business side to announce we're not doing StarCraft on that week because that's the week that people would most understand not doing StarCraft. And I feel like that makes a lot of sense business-wise for MLG, but it was disappointing that we got handled that way as a community. And then it was weird to see them be like, to be like, oh, look at this, Adam, or like Sundance. They're upset at us. Those fucking twats, those idiots, they're upset at us. When really it's like, of course we are. You should have handled a lot better. So that was the part that hurt me the most about that exchange. But moving forward, right, their language has very much so been, we're not saying we're never going to have StarCraft, which is, of course, what they should say, because unless they, like, literally went to war with Blizzard, they should never close doors like that. And right, they haven't, right, so maybe they will. But let's face the facts, ladies and gentlemen. For those of us that have been behind the curtain and knowing about this for a while, and then for you guys that are now starting to see the effects, it's very much so likely that MLG will very much so move away from having StarCraft at their big live events like we've come to know in past. They might have talk shows about it. They might host online stuff because we do have a great audience. We do have a great fan base. And if you want to continue to toke the like the charcoals in our flame, then you'll get some attention for that. But it's very likely that we will not have StarCraft at big events, unless the relationship between Blizzard and MLG in particular shifts and changes. And that doesn't mean that they get WCS back. It just means that it becomes more cost-effective for MLG to run StarCraft 2, because all the games that they have right now very much so work with Blizzard to make that economical. Although I will say this, I was under the belief that MLG paid Blizzard to have the StarCraft 2 there, and then actually Cloaken contacted me and said that's incorrect. They do not. So I don't know what to do with that, but that's what I was what I learned.
Thorzane and Suppy, any thoughts on anything that Jeff commented on, or again just the whole concept of no StarCraft 2 at MLG, or how they handled it?
It didn't hit me as hard as I thought it would. Like I didn't even kind of just like went meh. Okay, well, kind of expected. I knew it would come someday. I didn't think it would come this early. And obviously, I'm not a North American player, so it shouldn't affect me as much as you guys, even though I do go to every single MLG. But MLG, like, I hope it's not what Jeff said, that it's only that it's like probably going to be every single MLG, and that they're going to remove StarCraft 2 completely. But I don't see why they would return the game to their events after Columbus. Maybe there were some kind of infrastructure issues. I don't know. But I'm surprisingly fine with it for some reason.
Yeah, I mean, when I first heard about them talking about, like, when they were first kind of like, the attitude was very negative around the conception of this conversation of not having StarCraft at their events. I felt like, oh no, the sky is falling. That'll be terrible. But as in practice, kind of something that Suppy said, it does open the space for other people. Like, let's be honest, MLG was the last tournament to run that kind of a tournament, in part because of WCS, and we can talk about that, but also because they were the only ones that were putting on that kind of show. But NESL has now brought back into the scene. Maybe they can. Red Bull did buy a license for that weekend, so we will have a tournament on that weekend, which it's kind of unfortunate that it gets spoiled that way, but like... It does mean that there will be a Red Bull tournament, which is kind of cool. And Red Bull does have the power to put what they've been doing maybe on a slightly larger scale with like an attendance available.
No one,
yeah,
though.
They did,
oh, go ahead.
They did this one event, like the one in Austin, the Red Bull Battlegrounds, with like... that. It wasn't a Red Bull Battleground. It was like a Red... Or what's it called? What's the recent one it's called?
Yeah. No, they did. They had a Battlegrounds before.
Training grounds are the most recent ones. Oh, yeah. So the one in Austin was called a Battleground, and these are called Training Grounds. And then the one in Austin was like an actual tournament, which was really cool. I was there. Like, I really enjoyed it. And if it were to be a tournament like that, I think we'd be just fine, because that was like a really good tournament.
So what's interesting about this, and I think a lot of people should, you know, I mean, we don't know exactly what the details are, but yes, let's just assume that there's some sort of a Red Bull event the same weekend. And someone might say, well, is it possible that someone can come in and actually take the place of MLG, you know? And one thing that's kind of interesting is, like, there are no other organizations in existence in North America who have sort of the assets and the organization to throw a tournament like that. And people are like, well, what the fuck are you talking about, Wheat? But, like, imagine what other organization could actually just make a call and get 64 computers that, like, on a regular basis, whatever their deals are, however they have, you know, set themselves up as an organization over the past several years, like, they have this ability to do that. You know, I do think that while everything that Red Bull is doing and even all the great stuff that NASL has been doing, there still leaves a gaping hole, at least for StarCraft, to have a non-invite-only event. I think that is one of the, you know, one of the things that really sucks, right? Because it cuts out a lot of people, a lot of talent, a lot of up-and-coming players, and we've talked about this before. Now, let me just throw something at you guys. So, back in my day, in Quake 3, we were more like the International, where we had like the one big, maybe two big tournaments a year. And then everything else was just sort of like community-run online. Do you think the fact that there's a lack of money there, the fact that there's not as much of any sort of community effort to create something, even if it's online with our current, with the current talent in North America, like, why do you think that there's no middle step, I guess, is the question I'm asking in all of this, for StarCraft specifically?
I think we did have a little middle step before. We used to have a lot of online cups. We had Zotac. We still have Zotac. We used to have Playhem dailies, which everyone would play in. And, you know, the loss of that has really been a big loss to that middle step of, like, a community-run tournament where, like, normal players can compete and actually have a chance at winning something. And I think one of the big problems is we still have Zotac, which is a, like, $100 weekly tournament. But you'll see that everybody who participates in Zotac, they're all, like, Europeans and Koreans. There's, like, basically no North American players in Zotac Cups. And I think, I don't know, I feel like we really do need some kind of region-locked little tournament because, yeah, I think North American players should play against the Europeans and the Koreans in the Zotac NA Cup because, you know, it's good practice. And ideally, everybody should. But the thing is, everybody in North America has just got this mindset that there's no way to get any money. So they don't play in these cups. We don't have anything for any up-and-coming players. There's only invite-only tournaments. WCS America is super hard to get into. I really feel like we need some kind of, like, region lock stuff to encourage more participation from North American players.
Yeah. A couple of like really interesting points that come up in chat is that, you know, that's great. And they even said, I'd love to see that too, but you cannot deny that WCS for when it broadcasts, it doesn't leave any good holes really for those grassroots efforts to grow. Those community efforts to grow. I mean, you know, we've seen a couple of examples hit real close to home in that regard. But, yeah. What do you guys?
Go ahead, Sophie. Go ahead.
No, go ahead.
I mean, I was just going to say a little Chinese anecdote that I had.
Oh, yes.
Okay, I'll go.
So if you guys don't. Yeah.
Go ahead.
Okay. I was just going to say, like, you never necessarily know if something that appears to be a bad thing could potentially be a good thing. There's a little story that goes, an old man and his family had their horse run away from them one day, And all his neighbors went and came to them and said, oh, we're so sorry to hear about your loss. And he says, how can you know that's a bad thing? Then 3 days later, the horse comes back and brings another horse with it. And all of his neighbors come and congratulate him. They're like, wow, you're so lucky. That's such a great news story. And then he says, how can you know that's a good thing? And then 2 weeks later, his son gets on the horse and falls and breaks his leg. And all of his neighbors come over. They say, oh, we're so sorry to hear about your accident with your son. He says, how can you know that's not a good thing?
Can I stop you there? So
last part. And then a war starts. A war starts. And
it's for one-legged people, and he ends up being the champion of the one-legged people. Yeah.
No. A war starts, and because he broke his leg, he did not have to go to the war. The end.
But how do you know that's a good thing, Suppy?
Well, that's the end. That's the end.
Then he gets diabetes from sitting on his ass all day and dies, and the people come, and they're like, we're sorry. And they're like, how do you know that's not a good thing?
Okay, my point is... The MLG dropping StarCraft 2 seems like a bad thing, but how do you know it's not a good thing? Okay.
Okay, that's a very interesting perspective, Suppy.
Good God.
Dead optimism. Well, I know, Jeff, you had a comment. I would also just throw out there, see if anyone catches on. Axelav and Axeltoss have primarily been StarCraft 2 personalities. How does that affect them? I've not heard from either of them. And all this, but hopefully that's not affecting them negatively in any way. Jeff, you're going to make a comment.
Well, I saw Axelab. He's actually hosting a Infinite Crisis show with somebody else. So I think what they'll do is I don't know officially, but I imagine they'll find roles for them to do otherwise. And I know that Axeltoss has actually even reached out to me recently about doing a show. Infinite Crisis is the 17th MOBA. In terms of from good to bad.
But the first DC MOBA, Thorzane.
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
Mm-hmm. Anyways, I guess just to wrap up the MLG thing, you were saying, I think one of the saddest parts about it is the potential loss of a massive tournament that has an open bracket. That was certainly something that MLG brought to the table that nobody else could do. I mean, IPL did that for a while, but obviously they're gone. So that'll be missed. I guess where that's not the biggest of tragedies is that they were already kind of experimenting with not doing an open bracket. It's a little bit of a shame because they did the truest open bracket ever, one tournament before, and then afterwards they're like, no more StarCraft. And that was pretty cool. I thought people really liked that. But we won't know the full story for a while. As these things go, MLG's not going to come out and say, look, the reason we're not doing it is because we don't make money off you guys. What? They won't say that. So we don't know if it's literally that... They don't want to compete with a Red Bull event that's on that weekend that they knew about because they were already looking at a scaled back StarCraft broadcast, or if there is some kind of royalty payment that they have to do to Blizzard that they don't want to then pay because all their other partners are paying them for it. So they're trying to test the waters and see if they can make it without StarCraft. Who knows? But we're not going to have it. But I guess the only comment I would have is that this was just the tip of the iceberg for me in terms of the rough week for StarCraft, moving on.
If no one has any final comments on that, maybe
I was thinking, what do you guys think that StarCraft in particular in North America seemed like? We had IPL dropping. Well, IPL, I guess, stopped everything.
IPL was unrelated. MLG, yeah.
Right.
And now MLG and NESL had WCS issues. Am I right?
Yeah, but now
NESL could not operate with WCS. Try to imagine.
It just seems so I guess it's all it's not really StarCraft related. I mean, it's not really the fan base itself. It's Blizzard killed NESL, IPL killed themselves, and now I guess MLG, I guess that might be every MLG I've been to, there's been a lot of MLG, of StarCraft 2 fans. They haven't have a shortage of fans. So, I mean, it still seems as if it would be profitable in my eyes. But maybe the other, maybe they even have some new game they want to replace it with as soon as possible. They got this company paying them a lot of money to run their game. Well, they have to pay Blizzard.
They don't have to pay Blizzard is the official word we have.
Oh.
From Blizzard.
But they don't get any support. Which,
right.
You know, from a business perspective, folks have to at least go, okay, you know, I need to make money. this company is offering me X dollars to feature their game. This is actually a viable business model because I will make X money, you know, in this deal.
But I think then, if companies can just buy their games into the tournaments, even if they're like just mediocre games, it removes so many aspects of competitive play, in my opinion.
Yes,
like if it's a shitty game
does.
And people Stars just play it,
and
they
you
don't
know
really
what?
Like it, and like they just play it because you can make a lot of money playing it.
I'm
like,
trying Stars to think 8, of another company that it, ran a tournament where you it, paid to have your game there, and it wasn't based on competition necessarily.
Oh my God! Why don't we
world of World Christopher Games?
What? No, I mean, Jeff, you mentioned the most recent. Well, let's go back to 2005 and 6, where companies are like, wait a second. Don't actually pay us money. Just, like, put it, you know. So, hey, oh, hold on. You guys got spectator mode? What the fuck is spectator mode, Bob? Is like,
just say yes.
Yeah, we've got exactly. And, you know, while I do think things have gotten better, historically, this has never quite turned out well, right? The people speak. The numbers speak. The eyeballs speak. Even when World of Warcraft was a competitive game, the eyeballs spoke. In every single case with a popular game, the eyeballs speak. I don't think you can buy those eyeballs. I don't think you can just... Like, that's not how gaming works these days.
Yeah.
That's my biggest concern. You know, and I'm not saying there's not a place for it and that it might not have or it might have a decent any of these games could have a really decent competitive community. It's very possible. Especially MOBAs just because they're so popular right now. But I think that's still kind of risky. But my two cents.
Well, I feel like I agree. It's almost even outside our realm of conversation because at this point we sound like the petulant ex-girlfriend that's like, well, you can't do better than we did. You know, like, MLG is going to do what they're going to do. I think in closing, for me, I would just say that I'm sad that they handled it the way they did, and I think that it was a little bit funny that they then were upset with the community. Not, like, officially upset, but, you know, like, there was Adam's tweets and Sundance, like, yo, guys, like, calm down, like, think of the good times we had and stuff like that. And they're right.
I do. Fuck yeah, man. Fuck yeah. We've been having them for like 15 years. But I agree with you, Jeff, is that, you know, especially in this day and age where, like, guys, you know that shit's going to blow up on the internet if you go this route or you go this route. And, you know, for as much as people make business-related decisions all the time, it was a little shocking that there wasn't a little bit more hand-holding.
And it wouldn't cost anything. And I'll tell you, it gives me hope that, like, if the market can stay this way, when I'm done with StarCraft in, let's say, like 7 years or something like that, I'm going to have a great job being a PR for everybody if they need it, because we're going to move on to the next subject. But there's actually so many examples of people literally just... And it doesn't cost money, but you just make a message that sounds nice and you let people down easy as opposed to, we're done with StarCraft, fuck off! And then they're like, whoa, what do you mean you're upset about that? Like, come on, man, you know? Give me a mushy Sundance tweet that's a link to an article that's this long and it's Sundance talking about the greatest times he's had where he played the Marines and he remembers the roar of the crowd and meeting Boxer for the first time and how he wants to relive those moments, but for right now, we can't do it. So we'll come back to it if we can, you know?
Let's transition a little bit to then how the community took this news. Because I gotta be honest, like, a lot of the community, in some aspects, I think, like, just goes way over the top with speculation and what could happen and whatnot. And you actually wrote a post, Jeff, on Reddit. And, you know, like, why don't we talk a little bit about this? Because I know I've got quite a bit of opinion on, you know, the concept of dead game, but...
Yeah, so part of the reason why we're talking about how this week was hard on StarCraft guys is not solely because of MLG's announcement, because that's not where the... I mean, that's part of it for sure, but for me it was actually that amidst this week that is, it's tough because, okay, Dota deserves love and respect. And this week with the International, I mean, this is not a Dota show, but everyone will agree, they put on a spectacular show. They had great games. They had an amazing dream finish. They had an amazing tournament, a huge prize pool. So certainly in that week, it's all about Dota, as it should be, when you put up that kind of money and you have that kind of Super Bowl event. But the reason it was hard for us StarCraft folk was because as gamers, we're very aware of like who's the number one game, who's getting the most Twitch views, which game is the most famous. And when that game is in the limelight, and I/StarCraft was guilty of this too, when we were in the limelight, we're like, yeah, what's up? We're top dogs. Like, do you see that event where we fucking crushed it? You know, and we're like really happy and proud of ourselves. And that was this week for Dota. So what ends up happening for a lot of us StarCraft folk is that no matter what we do or say or what we feel, the vibe that comes back at us from the internet is like, your game is declining, you are dying, your game is bad, it's worse, it's not good. And this feeling permeated around the audience and the StarCraft II community. So when MLG announced this during that week, it was like the final straw that I had to reach out and be like, look, the game is not dead, we're okay, things are not where, you know, we're not number one, and that too is okay. But let's talk about how the future is going to be better, because it is, and I believe that. And the further we get away from the International, the more people are going to come back and be like, actually, StarCraft's still a pretty damn good game. I'm going to check out that WCS thing in 10 days. And when they watch the finals at Gamescom, they're going to be really happy. We're going to have 100,000-plus people watching. It's going to be okay.
Yeah, and just to continue on Jeff's point, I mean, there was a lot of negative stuff, I feel, this week, but I feel like it's also really beneficial to focus on the positives. Like, I felt like WCS America, I watched almost all of it. I felt like it was really, really a great success. It beat WCS Season 1, even with the International going on, so I think that's really good news. And I'm really excited. I was excited to see the Chinese players there. I was excited to see the production. And I'm excited to see the World Finals. So I think there's also positives to focus on during this week, even though it's, like, so blatantly, like, this negative aura like surrounding the game right now.
I only watched the VODs of WCS NA, but it was so much more fun to watch than the previous season. Like, it felt like, even though I was only watching the VODs, it felt like I was a part of the tournament, not as a player, but like as a viewer, instead of the MLG where I was just watching games. So big kudos to NASL. They did a great job. Yeah. How were the numbers in WCS overall? Were like, I didn't really...
Europe peaked at 68,000, I want to say, and NA peaked at something like 48, 50,000.
Okay. And I'm guessing the Korean one is like secret?
Nobody can figure out the Korean ones.
Yeah, okay.
They'll say what Twitch is, but then they won't know what the GOM player is, and then there's like the OGN cast and all that stuff. It's a little too complicated.
Right. Yeah. So again, I'd like to look at history a little bit. I think it's kind of humorous to me how people use the term dead game, right? Because let's give another history lesson and talk about dead games, because I don't think people talk to them about the same way. Quake 3 is a dead game. It came out in 1999. It's 2013, and still, this year, there was a $20,000 tournament for it.
Yeah.
You know what? I guarantee you that if you love StarCraft, StarCraft is not going to even be that dead game for another 5 fucking years. There will be StarCraft, like, competitions in 10 years. It might be once a year for $10,000, but it'll happen, because that's how long it takes for a game to actually die. With an additional expansion on the horizon and other games coming out, there are going to be ups and there are going to be downs. And every single game that gets in the competitive limelight is going to have to deal with that. We've already seen it affect other games even more significantly. But this whole concept of, you know, bail ship, for me, it's like, if you still are fans of the game and fans of the player, that's the reason to watch. I sure as fuck am not going to, like, lose much interest because company A decides they want to do it this way. I think I lose more interest when the bad stuff comes from Blizzard. You know, than whether, you know, like the MLG news, just because it's like I feel like they're the ones that should constantly be getting it right. So I mean, I don't know what you guys think about that, but the whole concept of like the dead game thing, it's like, fuck, Counter-Strike 1.6 is a dead game. Still, $15,000 tournaments here and there. You know, it's just like I don't really get that. What I see happening is ridiculous growth around everything. And yes, a lot of the attention has gone away from it. You know, from like you said, Jeff, like it being in the limelight. But you know, overall, there's still a fuck ton of viewers out there that are watching esports in some way, shape, or form.
Yeah, I feel like dead game is like a thing that people are saying. Either it's like it's to be cute on Twitter, like you see. That was a weird joke that started a while ago with like Scoots and even like our own manager Cody. Like they say it to be funny, but then other people kind of carried it on as like
sure
an overemphasis on what's actually happening. But anyways, I guess what I would just say is like I think they say that because StarCraft used to be the number one game, and all these other games have surged up to the top. So it's interesting to them to poke fun at like the fallen boxing champion type thing. You know, like StarCraft is no longer the game, so it's kind of fun to point out them getting crushed by other things, I guess. It's just tough because for those of us that make a living from this and like this is our life, sometimes that negativity really gets us down. So it was important to like try to focus, like Seppi said, on the positivity. Because there are a lot of good things, and despite the international and everything else that was going on, those numbers are okay. Like, nobody should be super excited about them, because those numbers should be a lot higher, and they should be going upward as opposed to downward. But due to the scheduling snafu, it didn't end up being that bad. Like Thorzane said, NESL did a great job. ESL always does a good job with their show, and the games were good. So we still have a game to be excited about and watch, and the future's okay.
Yeah, TI3 was amazing, so it could have been a lot worse. It really could have been a lot worse.
What was the viewer numbers for the international?
Well, they did post recently at least 1 million concurrents across several networks. So it sounds like it
didn't... Yeah, but what kind of networks did they stream at?
Twitch...
In-game.
In-game. What were the other three? That
China, like... Yeah, a bunch of different languages.
I don't know. Oh, yeah, and TV was the only thing. So this was just online concurrence.
Okay.
Yeah.
And who knows about China? They have their own everything.
Right. Like a TV station for
half a billion people watching.
Yeah. Just as they China. Should. It was great. Like I said, I mean, there's no hate to be had for Dota. It was an amazing show. I guess it was just it's worth us talking about that people maybe... Like, that was the whole point of my post. Was like, hey, let's try to focus on the good, because, like... It was a weird like Dr. Phil moment for me where I'm like, guys, we're not the number one game, and I feel like that should be absolutely a non-shocker to everyone, but it has to be said because people are still trying to be like, neener, 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 you're not the number one game anymore, and it should be like totally fine. We're like, yeah, we're not. We're top five, which is sick. Really excited about that. Like, I play one of the most exciting and challenging games on the planet that the most people watch, and I do it for a living, and that's really cool. And people are like, well, it's not number one. Like, yeah, that's fine. There's other games that people like more. That's cool. Mine's great, too. So I just wanted to try and shift. I wanted to try to get away from this attitude of, like, everything's bad, we're getting worse, to more like, hey, this is a tough week because other games are kicking some supreme ass, but we're still okay. We have a good future.
Any final thoughts, guys? If you want to quit everything right now, now would be the time to do it. Just be like, you know what, I'm done, man.
Fuck this topic. Let's go on.
Okay. All right. I'm in. Suppy, are you... Fuck this topic?
GG.
GG. GG indeed. All right, let's talk about balance change possibilities. Because this is what I love about this. Today, Suppy is like, hey, guys, these balance changes are awesome. And Naniwa was like, the Vipa change is not okay. I don't know why Arnold just came out right there. Naniwa not happy about the Vipa change. Of course, these are all balanced suggestions, which should be thrown out there right away before anyone wants to.
Most balanced suggestions they've put out there have been implemented into the
that
game.
Is not
every
not
single
true,
one, but
Dorzane,
like most of them.
That is not true. 50-50 Burrow was never implemented.
Where is
it
that?
Isn't there. He has an example where you're wrong.
Yes. Yes. And
I said most of the things.
Well, you know what? That is like the most important one that they fucking did.
So it's more important than nerfing Hellbats, for example. And
yes. Yes. Man, if I could just burrow second, you know, 50 gas going to burrow, then Hellbats, who cares about them? Anyway.
Yeah, you could just burrow all your drones. Who cares?
Exactly. All right, so here's what they got. The first one is the Overseer speed buff. And I don't know that this has actually even been implemented. This is just kind of like what they're talking about. Good to chat anyway. Overseer speed buff after upgrade, I guess to deal a little bit with those Widowmine plays and much-watched WCS AM, I guess, the finals. Combined mech ground and air upgrades. Vipers start with full energy. Yay. And, yeah. Let's talk about who wants to. Suppy is the resident Zerg. Do you want to maybe make the joyous comments about this so that?
I mean, I'm not necessarily like glad that it's Zerg in particular the buffs, but I'm glad that Blizzard has been consistently in Heart of the Swarm been using buffs to balance the game rather than what they did in Wings of Liberty, which was nerf everything. So I think I've said this before, but I think that's just a way better way to balance the game and make it much more dynamic and fun, because Brood War, for example, had every single unit was imbalanced in its own way, but it all worked out perfectly to make it perfectly balanced. So I like the direction they're going with it. Even I am a little bit, I'm like interested to see how the Viper is going to work, because I feel like versus Protoss, you could just like walk over there and just kill him ASAP, but I don't know. What I've actually noticed is like a lot of times when we've been theory crafting how big the game is going to change from these balances. Like, I remember we were talking about the Warp Prism, but Blizzard's changes have actually, so far in Heart of the Swarm, I feel like they've all been pretty solid changes. I don't think there's been any, like, huge, like, terrible change that they've made.
Well, in regards to, like, what you said about sort of balancing with buffs instead of nerfs, like, I mean, I think a good example is the Overseer speed buff, right? Because it'd be really easy to be like, oh, Widowmine Marine, you know, like what? Which one of them are you going to nerf because they're an issue? It's like, well, Zerg has a problem with this. What if we just made that Overseer a little bit faster so we didn't have to fuck with that side of it? I really do like that sort of idea of thinking as well. You know,
is there an issue in CVT? Is Tan beating Zerg?
Are Widowmine
Zerg beats Tan?
I mean, I personally feel like ZVT is one of the most balanced matchups right now, but I think a lot of people are like noticing that. I don't know. I think there is some issues dealing with the Widowmines. I mean, I don't know.
Let me say this. And you're about to enter into the tearful Protoss stage, so if that hurts you,
uh-oh,
fair warning. I think that in theory, this patch is one of the most hilarious things I could ever see, because it's like Zerg and Terran for 1 month dipped in winning percentage, literally 1 month. Every other month, they're dominating. Protoss is by far the third best race in StarCraft. So for 1 month, Protoss figures it out. Blizzard's like, I imagine like there's a battle room with like red spinning lights with like, the Protoss are actually fucking winning. Get it, and everyone's like running in, like they're putting on the checks. What's going on? And they're like, the Protoss are winning. I don't know how they're doing this. And they're like running in and they're typing up like, what have they done? They've innovated. God damn it, they're figuring out things. Well, they're like, well, let's talk about this. We know what we were supposed to do. So they're like putting their heads together. But I still laugh. Because despite the winning percentages, they still can't win like a goddamn tournament outside of WCS EU, where Duck Duck manages to out PvP everybody else. So like, there's one, but he just barely avoids MMA, who surge for it anyways. And then Nanua, whoever ruined things by beating, actually Grubby beat Vortex. But it's funny to me because it's literally 1 month of this winning percentage turnaround. Still, only one tournament was won by Protoss. And immediately Terran and Zerg are looking at buffs. But even inside of that, the Protoss brain in me can't help but to laugh, because they're still confusing themselves. Because they're like, because David Kim is like, we would like to buff Mech Terran in TVZ, because we, or just in general, because we noticed that it's strong, but nobody's quite using it. On to the next one. We would like the Viper to start with full energy, because we want it to be strong against Protoss. But someone should have been like, yo, David, doesn't that, like, completely fuck mech over? And he's like, I don't. We'll see in the test run. I don't know. Maybe. So the things that came out, they're silly on all levels for me. So that's why I look at this patch and I just kind of laugh. I'm like,
really?
What?
Does the Viper change anything? You get the Viper, you suck some mana out of buildings, and you have full energy in like 10 seconds.
Thorzane, let me tell you how the Viper's going to change everything, okay?
Yeah, I'll let you tell me.
Okay,
tell
as me. A guy with like, you know, pretty average APM and pretty, you know, sucks at the game and by comparison to guys like you, you know? I'm like, oh, I'm Hive now. I got some Vipers coming out. This is going to be great, you know? And then I'm like, oh, you know, I see all those pros do it. I need to, like, build some spores and shit out in the middle. And so since I don't have any fucking APM, I'm, like, building Evo chambers and spores. And I'm fucking getting ready for my Vipers to suck out some energy. And then all of a sudden the Protoss just like, ah, fuck you. And my Vipers aren't there and they haven't sucked anything up. And so now what this change really does is it gives mediocre players like me the ability to be like, oh, I fucked up and it don't matter. I don't need those Evo chambers. Like, what? Viper, blinding cloud. And then...
Okay, so this has, like, very little implications.
It's not the biggest
I'm actually being totally serious Starcraft. As well, because I don't know how this translates to the top level. Like, getting just that free little bit. Like, that's one of my problems.
Let me tell you. So this is where it'll be felt. It's not the biggest of deals. Yes, okay, some Evo chambers are not going to have to get made, and some health will go down. But the reason it's a big deal is because from going from Hive to Evo chambers to sucking the energy out to being across the map is like an extra 25-second turnaround. And Templar Archives and Templar with feedback can get built pretty quick. So what this says is that if you don't see the Hive complete, you're getting your Colossus abducted unless you did open up Templar, which is starting to become more in fashion anyways. So it cuts down the reaction time by a lot. So there will be more Protoss caught off guard by this. But it's not like such a crazy big buff that it's going to make the biggest of deals. I mean, you just heard Wheat's spiel on Platinum, so we can see where that's going to be affected.
Come on, Diamond.
Diamond, right. Sorry. Diamond on three accounts.
only on two.
Protoss, like, what happens and what should happen almost, I would argue, but it should happen for all three races. If Protoss doesn't scout this transition happening, unless they naturally open up Templar, which you should hear me say, like, there should be a... That should equal they don't do that. Protoss don't typically open Templar against Zerg unless there's a reason to. That could be a pretty, pretty fucking big buff. But if the Protoss scouts like they're supposed to, then this isn't that big of a deal.
Okay, so...
But it does fuck mech, by the way. It fucks mech so hard.
Yeah, I think...
I don't know. I mean, it still just takes... Like, how long does it take to get full energy? Like,
well, it's just... You can make them reactively now as opposed to setting them up, is what I'm saying, though. Like, it's not that much. Like, we're not trying to talk about... Like, they didn't give Ultras a laser cannon. You know, like, there's not a...
It's not like you work in Templar with full energy, you know. It's just like... These units already had the capability of getting full energy really quickly.
They just cut down like two steps on it, so it's easier now for Zerg.
Yeah.
So it is a buff, but it's not like Mechas now can't be done. It's not like Straylock is like writing a second open letter to Blizzard right now asking them to remove this buff that hasn't. Yeah. Comrades, it has come to the final hour.
Apparently as well, I just want to point this out, that in point three, the Vipers start with full energy, is that they have been discussing various options for the Zerg, both internally and... with top players and casters around the world.
Right.
I guarantee you that I was not one of those individuals. I'm not sure who the hell was those, you know, who that was. But I definitely don't think there were any Terrans on that panel. I got to agree with you, Control.
No. You know what, though? It's fine. Like, this goes through Terran and Zerg once again. Like, the red lights stop spinning. Protoss go. I'm joking because it's not going to be that big of a deal, but... I'm waiting for like the month where Protoss does slink so low that they're like, all right, we're toying with the idea that when you warp in Templar, they have full energy. Like,
Caldarian, I think they should put the
return of the Protoss
EX Plus version.
Yeah,
I think they're just going to start you with Warp Gate next. It's like, we feel it's 50-50. Anyway. Like, yeah, like, who fucking cares? It's like...
We've noticed some pro gamers forgot to research up warp gate upgrades, so we thought we'd just go ahead and make it easy for them. Now this patch won't be that big of a deal. Like Thorzane said, it's not going to completely eliminate mech, but I just couldn't help but to laugh as a Protoss looking at this. Like, really, guys? 1 month? Okay. I'll forever remember the month of July. That was the month we almost did it, guys. We almost got there. We had rain in the finals. We won Europe with Duck Duck leading the charge. Like, oh God,
we're gonna do it.
I can see Blizzard 2, like, they almost won a GSL, guys. What are we doing? Like, what is going on? And some guys like, I'm sorry, sir. I was in charge. Does anybody else want Protoss to win? Does anybody? I didn't think so.
Let's talk about WCS. Even though In Control just kind of recapped it from a Protoss point of view there. But WCS took place this weekend, started with Korea, went on EU, and then into AM. And kicking things off for Korea. Actually, someone else said, so Innovation is the only person from last season's finals that have made it back to this season's finals. How crazy is that?
Yeah.
That's actually...
It's weird it worked out that way.
Kind of insane. So Maru versus Rain... The Artosis curse.
By the way, I knew Maru would beat Innovation. Not a doubt in my head.
Oh yeah.
You weren't on the show that week to definitely solidify it. But we all knew that's what you were thinking, Thorzane.
Yeah.
Well, how about this? In terms of impressive Terrans, did you get a chance to see Maru versus Rain?
Did I? Let me think. I know I didn't watch it live. I think. Oh, I watched. No.
Okay. No. So you don't. We don't get you hear you comment. No,
I watched
on
another series.
Or not
he doesn't really watch StarCraft anymore. It's more
true.
Like a...
Hey, I watched some other bots, but I was more focused on TVZ.
Oh yeah.
That's right. Marvel
wouldn't be worried
Rain,
about Protoss either.
It was predicted 4-2 by many.
If that helps.
The other direction. However. Maru came out on top.
That was crazy, man. And this is the series that Dan will look back on for all the headaches he ever has. Like, it used to be funny to be like, the Artosis curse, ha, 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 ha. But with this series, like, the way it flipped around, it's actually getting like, is Dan actually, like, he was raised, like, he's an orphan child from a gypsy encampment that, like, his parents raised him up and they come back to him and are like, Dan, we got something to tell you. We're not your real biological parents.
You
your mom's
fell
a witch.
From the sky.
Yeah.
It's like Man of Steel.
You're actually a gypsy witch doctor. Like, it's kind of crazy. But anyways, into the series. The series was fun just because the way it turned out. Because it looked like at first like it was going to be a Rain dominance, which is kind of boring. I was excited for Rain because it was going to be like a repeat, you know. This is our second coming of Protoss awesomedom. But I liked the way Maru surged back, and I liked the fact that a young kid was able to do it too, by the way. That's amazing that he kept his cool and came back and took it out of the grasp of Rain.
You know, we've talked about that a few times, right, when he played Innovation and even in his games versus Symbols. And I just believe now that he gives zero fucks. Yeah. You know, like, I think that is pretty interesting to get into that spotlight at that young of an age. Because there's either two ways you go, right? Either it makes you nervous, it's something you have to overcome, or you're just like, whatever, man, I'm here to kick this guy's ass in a video game. And that is how Maru seems completely unfazed by the fact that there are thousands of people, or it's a big broadcast, or lights, or who he's playing, or whatever. That's a powerful freaking trait to have when you are that young.
It reminds me of Stefano. I think that was his biggest strength. Like, he could play at his best at every single tournament, while a lot of other players would just play like their best at home, but at tournaments they play at 90%.
Yeah.
I thought the interesting thing for me as I was watching it was like just like the progression of how it went. I missed game one, but game two it seemed like everything Maru did wouldn't work. All his drops, all his things, like everything just died. He tried to kill the rocks. There were like two stalkers that got in his main on Anaconda, and then all the stalkers like killed his SCVs from the low ground. Then game three, he finally turned around, he cheesed, and then I'm like, all right, maybe the next four games he'll win by, like, cheesing every single game, right? But no, then game four, he, like, won a huge macro game, and then from that point, I felt like Rain was kind of like,
oh, he told me.
Like, yeah. What happened? I just lost a macro game against Maru. Next two games, he does like, Rain is the one who's cheesing, right? It's like a role reversal. Because yeah. Rain cheesed the next two games, right? And I thought that was just really cool. Like, I felt like it was very, like, it was kind of like a role reversal, which was really interesting for me.
They showed him, and he looked like Boxer went in his booth to calm him down, man. It was, Rain is, he's as cool and calm and collected as they get as well, but in that series, he looked rattled, actually. He was like,
he was sweating.
Breathing into his hands, sweating. It was tough.
Yeah. So the five that make it into the finals are Maru, Innovation, Rain, Bomber, First, and Supernova. Is that right? No.
Yeah.
First, not Supernova, right?
Oh, no. Yeah, First.
Yeah. So it's just Maru, Innovation, Rain, Bomber, and First.
I think that's the two hottest Protoss playing right now. I'm happy to see Bomber get another shot at something big because he was the guy that was blowing people's minds with his run to the WCS, or through the WCS, excuse me. And then, of course, you still get Innovation for that star power, and then Maru, who's the champion. So it's a good five to send, that's for damn sure.
And that does kick things off. I haven't looked at the full distribution. We'll look at it. But two Protoss and three Terrans going to the Season 2 finals from Korea region. And that leads us into EU region, where some of the some of the interesting facts that come out of here post-event.
Protoss!
Is that, a lot of Protoss. Grubby tied for the highest-ranking foreigner in all of WCS with Scarlet at the round of four. Obviously, Duck wins over MC in the finals, and there is even, shows a lot of emotion. And
so did Grubby.
And we'll talk a little bit about how it's gonna play out for the Season 2 finals. But let's talk a little bit about the top eight, what we saw this weekend that ran in tandem with the WCS NA.
I think
U.S., whatever.
One of the interesting things for me was obviously you have to attribute some of this to the international, but I felt like EU had this dream run of WCSs where they had like the most intriguing top eights you could imagine, and then finally that karma caught up to them. Like nothing bad about I have nothing but to disrespect to say to these guys, but like that final eight had intriguing storylines, but they phased out at the round of eight. Like the round of four was actually pretty damn boring. Relative to what Europe was used to. So its viewership was a little bit lower, actually. And again, the international. So this is me putting out some interesting ideas, or maybe not that interesting to you, but I thought that was interesting. Duck winning is like, they want it to be a really cool storyline, and I'm sure a lot of people do think it's a really cool storyline, but of the guys there to win, it's actually one of the most least intriguing victories as far as I'm concerned, just because he's his play style and him as a person, like no one knows. He actually changed his name from Finale, where he was gaining some notoriety, to Duck. So he like completely reset himself and then came back as a Korean that has nobody knows anything about him at all. And all of a sudden, he's one of the five guys in Europe, and then he wins it. So it's kind of like it's almost like a self-deprecating bad story for Europe. It's like generic Korean shows up and wins. Like even MMA and MC have gigantic followings and like the comeback story, and that would have been amazing. But it's no. It's Duck, and they're like, hey, Duck with his first big victory, and like, he's such an aggressive Protoss. Commentators, isn't he aggressive? An aggressive Protoss? He's aggressive? And then everyone's like, yeah, yeah. The coolest thing, though, was to see that emotion. Like, that was pretty cool by him. Because he felt it, because it's fucking hard, man. Like, WCS is a brutal system. He took the risk of competing in Europe, which is really hard to do. He actually failed, like, three of four qualifiers to get into the Challenger League for WCS Europe, but because of the latency from playing from Korea, and then all of a sudden he makes it to the actual final and wins life-changing money. That's pretty cool. I'm more speaking from like a global standpoint that I thought the viewership and the interesting lack of storylines was interesting. I wanted Grubby to win. Like that momentum was going. It was like he was beating some really impressive people, but then kind of as it happens with Grubby, doop. The story gets cut short, and that's it. Yeah, we still haven't had the big Grubby victory
close.
Yet.
We haven't. He's kind of been riding some similar waves as Jadong. We'll talk about in a bit. But this leaves the Season 2 finals with five additional Protoss and one Terran.
Yeah.
So ESL continued to do a remarkable job Got a couple of fantastic gifts of Red Eye from the event. I just absolutely love that one with him dropping the box. It's hilarious. You know, and I'll tell you what, if you wanted to study PvP, God damn it, this weekend you should go back and watch those matches, because there were certainly some good matches that took place. A lot of my games. And that shoots us over to AM. And let me open this one up. So I just want to give a shout out to the folks that threw together Omaha Barcraft, because I actually got home from family vacation and went over for a couple hours to a local place. They packed it in Nebraska, man. They packed a freaking bar with StarCraft II fans. It was pretty awesome. Yeah, it was pretty awesome. So good job for them. But like the thing that I really loved about WCSAM is that what you were talking about in control is that we got a really nice a really nice set of players. You know, like overall, all the matches, we had different matchups, ZVP, ZVT, etc. And then into the finals, or the semifinals, the ZVZ into TVT, into the finals. And I got to say, definitely the finals for me, probably the most disappointing part of the whole competition. And if anything, you know, of course, the storyline of Jadong winning is a big one, but the fact that it was a 4-0, like, no fan, commentator, player, etc., wants to see that. Like, we want him to play all seven games.
Pretty it hard, too, little, by the way. Like, yeah. There's a couple games that were interesting for a second, but Polt, for the most part, like, the Neoplanet S game comes to mind. The Newkirk one's interesting for a second, but Polt played pretty fucking good. Like, Jadong is my boy, and I'm on his boat no matter what, but Polt looks primed to do big things, like especially TVZ. My God.
Dude.
Thank God there's no more Zergs in the WCS finals, because we won't get to see that again. But unless he hits Jadong again, that'd be brutal. But he looks good.
Looks fucking amazing.
Yeah, I have no idea how he does it. I watched the games, and it seemed like there was nothing really that stood out. Like, whoa, this was amazing. Like, I think it's just like, overall, he's such a solid player. He has a great macro, great micro, like no fancy builds. He didn't even drop like a single time in the whole best of seven.
I noticed that. He never dropped.
He did.
Yeah,
drop.
You noticed that too.
Boobs.
Like I looked like, because I really studied the game and I was like, okay, when do I drop TVZ? Apparently never.
Like, he did drop. You're exaggerating. I could think
he did
of every game he dropped.
He dropped
start,
like the meta with the Marauders and
the four Marauder drop.
He did that but one, then, but also the Newkirk game, he took out the main base by dropping that, getting the Greater Spire. It was a big deal.
Oh, yeah, that's true. That's true.
Neoplanet S, he's dropping all the bases all the time while pushing that lower third. But
utility drops, though. So, right, Thorzane, you're just like where you would normally expect something, or...
I mean, when he was up against Ultralisks, he started dropping, but like when there was Mutalisks out on the map, he didn't even drop, like, ever. Maybe, like, once or twice, but, like,
you're
not as much as many other Terrans.
When he had Mutalisk, he wasn't dropping, but when the Mutalisks were gone and he had Ultras, he started to drop? Huh. I wonder why.
Yeah, well, I mean, you're still supposed to drop against Mutalisks. Supposed to.
Unless you're who says you don't? Because Colt's
I mean, don't you agree, Suppy? Do you think, like, as soon as their Mutalisks out on the map, the Terran should stop dropping completely?
No. They still drop. But I think, I mean, Polt just had his own style where it's just his focus, instead of doing the drops, which I think it is so popular, you do drop when there's Mutas out.
I was making a joke, I know.
Okay, yeah. But what he was doing, like, he was like just like attack, 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 and then like rally everything over and keep attacking and keep attacking. That's what he was doing. Yeah. And like, yeah, I think, yeah, he definitely did play really well, but I don't know. I feel like Jadong, like, he didn't play up. I don't feel like he played
Jadong
up to his
played
caliber.
Bad. He played bad, but yeah. I don't know that there should be a but after he played well. Polt played some of the best TVZ I've seen since fucking Jokchi Leenok, like 20,000 years ago, man. Like, it was, he did, as Thorzane said, and I agree fully, he didn't do anything super flash. He didn't come out with a ace up the sleeve build. Like, nothing was reinvented here. It was just that his upgrades were constantly in sync. He hit 3-3, where if the Zerg was delayed at all, it was a stark 2-3 upgrade advantage. He was always pushing the closest Zerg base with Biomine play. where he was trading. Like, it looked pretty bad for a while, but all it took was a couple of splashes from the mines, the mute account to dip one time, and then the game was over. Like,
oh,
that
God,
was it.
Yeah, and that was because he was so solid in every facet of his game. Really, really impressive.
I would actually commit. Like, I would do a Kickstarter to commission $100,000 to get us to do like a riff tracks of Idra commentating that game, because bless Greg Soul, he's one of my best friends, but he like does not understand Terran attrition style, where like they lose units and still win the game. Like, if you watch his stream, he's like, I don't get it. He fucking lost units the whole time and he still won. I would love to like do a today's presentation is the WCS NA finals brought to you by Idra, commentated by Idra Soulcasting. Greg would be like, and the Terran's a fucking idiot. Pulse a noob, he's losing all these things. There's, yeah, the mines are dying because Jadong split the lings really
like,
well.
And but like, look at this. Another 80 Marines right behind it.
My favorite Greg
can't
transition
make
is
banlings
the,
fast
is
enough.
The, oh, goddamn. Or, you know, like that like high voice he does where he's like, oh, shit. Oh, goddamn. You know, he raises it up a little bit and he realizes, wait a second, I was wrong. Oh, fuck. Because that's what the games look like. Like, I was, like, sitting there as a Jadong fan. I'm like, yeah, woo! He's like, he's on top of it macro. He's got four bases. Pult's only on three. But then Pult just kept showing up with 50 Mineral Marines and 25 Mineral Widow Mines, and he just eventually won with 3-3 upgrades every time.
Yeah, I know exactly what you're talking about, because, like, games 2 through 4... every single game, it looked like Jadong was winning at one point.
Yeah.
And that's why you might get that reaction where it's like, what am I supposed to do against, like, Terran or whatever? I actually took what my opinions on why he lost each of the games were. And I think the biggest lead that was lost was definitely Neo Planet S. Like, he was up, like, 50 supply at one point and ended up losing.
Yeah. Four bases.
I think the big thing that game, if anybody's wondering, is... for some reason, I felt like he kept trading like very small numbers of units over and over. I never felt like he had that one overwhelming push to like push Pult back and then gain map control. He was always defending in that one little ridge where if you don't have creep spread there, it's so difficult to defend. And his counterattacks, they were doing okay. I felt like he could have counterattacked into Pult's natural more. He did have that one Baneling roll in where it like killed every single SCV. And Pult only had one turret there. So that was one point of weakness I felt like Jadon could have exploited a little more, but I think
he
the big
feel
thing
comfortable.
That
he was constantly defending, you know.
Yeah, he was constantly defending. He just if he just crushed one attack with like a bigger army and like been a little bit more patient, I think he could have taken that game. And like I said, games 2 and 4 both looked like he was going to win as well. So
yeah,
just some small mistakes that a solid player like Pult was able to take advantage of.
Yeah, it was tough. In the Belshire Vestige game, I felt like Jadon was ahead too, and then that one, it just has that moment where you realize the Zerg is broken because the Terran has just been trading so well. I think a big thing that people look closer to as well is that Banelings are really expensive. Like, there's definitely moments where a Baneling pops and kills 5 Marines, and that Baneling is certainly worth it, but there's also a lot of times where those 6 Banelings come rolling in, and they get blown up by a Widow Mine. And I'm not talking about the crazy moment when 20 Banelings get blown up by a Widow Mine.
Normally,
happens,
right.
We all shake our head and go, okay, that's why the Zerg lost. But I'm talking about, like, 5 or 6 Banelings. That's a muta point 5. You know, that's like, it's starting to cut up there. And every time those little events happen where 5 Banelings pop on a Marauder and 2 Marines or a Widow Mine, that stuff adds up. And it's just, I feel like it takes an accountant to truly appreciate TVZ because it's not about, it's very rarely mega battle, burr, and then the winner plows forward. Like, it just doesn't happen that way. It's more little battles happening for 20 minutes in a row, and that's why it's one of the most exciting matchups, but it's also a very strangely attrition matchup. Mm. Which, by the way, and this is kind of related, not necessarily in the TVZ final, but the only matchup that, like, if there was an attrition chart in StarCraft, TVZ is like, whoa, it's like way above TVP, way above a lot of the other matchups. But then there's one matchup, by the way, that is actually 500 times higher up there, and it's TVT. Fucking TVT. Holy crap. Pult Tasia, two of like the best Kryn players, they like look over here because they're controlling the other 40 Marines and 5 tanks that are fighting. And then over here, there's 60 Marines wandering to tanks and just like with the new the new animation, I love it because it's not like they just disappear. They're like, ah! They're like flying everywhere. Winds are exploding. Like,
And the commentators are like, ah, few Marines are dying there. Let's look over here and more Marines are dying. Just things are blowing up everywhere all the time. And it's so, like, and again, from that Protoss sad perspective, I'm looking at that and I'm like,
yes, let the superpowers do battle. No one wins.
It's everything, like, they're like, and they do crazy bold things. Like, they'll be like, load up my whole army and go for a drive. And they, like, go in and it, like, just missile turrets are blowing them up and there's tanks already there. They're blowing them up. And they're like, he just lost his whole army. And then you look over and he's got another one this same fucking size. Like, it just instantaneously comes out. And again, as a Protoss, I look and I'm just like, it's like witnessing two gods do battle and you're just like, oh my god! It's a fun matchup to watch, is what I'm saying.
Go ahead.
I was just going to say, I don't generally watch TVT, but I tuned into that series and it was just so back and forth. Like, everybody would just lose their army multiple times. It was just so fun to watch. So that was a very apt description of it.
We leave AM with a Protoss, a 2 Terran, and 2 Zerg for the final players. And so that means, I thought I had it here. And we still are going to talk about a couple of topics regarding WCS. Where in the frick? Here we go. All right, so that leaves the Season 2 Finals race distribution. It's something that In Control is going to be very happy with at 8 Protoss, 6 Terran, and 2 Zergies.
I'm not happy. I want an equal. I don't know. I'm okay with PvP, but I don't want too much of it because it is a fun matchup, but sometimes it gets pretty bland. But I like the diversity. I like seeing all the races represented. So 2 Zergs makes me sad, to be honest with you. Hopefully those 2 Zergs make it deep so we can see some Zergs for a while, though. Who are the 2 Zergs?
Scarlet, like, and Jadong, which are the 2 most, like,
you know,
the
what?
Ones I am most excited to watch about by far. Like, those are the 2.
It's going to be a goddamn Zerg versus Zerg first round. And if that happens...
If it happens, oh, you know what? Man, fuck my life.
And talking about that series, by the way, that they did play at WCS America, that was a pretty intense series,
too. Oh,
yeah,
yeah.
Six pool, fifth game, wow.
God, I'm not sure when groups are going to be chosen, if there is going to be, like, a show for that or whatever.
I hope so. It'd be a missed opportunity if they didn't do that, but, it's the ESL crew, I think, running this show, so they should be able to, they'll do that, they know that.
So that's August 23rd through the 25th. I think it's just like a week and a half away. Yeah, it's next weekend. It's going to be taking place at Gamescom. And we do have the caster and host lineup, which was revealed by ESL today, including Todd, Chobra, Kalaris, Red Eye, Artosis, Apollo, and Rotterdam. Note that Rotterdam is the only one not wearing a jacket in that fucking picture. How unprofessionally. Chobra. I don't know what you're wearing, but but Rotterdam, you're wearing a t-shirt.
Oh, he's a Korean, and nobody knows what they're wearing.
Oh, they got Chobra.
It's actually, like, a Korean to know what a Korean's wearing.
It's
speaking, by the way, Wheat, of making jokes based on race and stereotypes.
Well,
it's
so funny because I was going to be like, hey, Chobra kind of looks like Kevin Lin a little bit. Oh, guys. Yeah, that was the other thing we were going to talk about.
Quick note on that. Yeah,
quick note on that. So during the AM, Terry the intern, who, like, during this whole WCS week, I guess, was, like, picking up some steam, that sort of Edward Starcraft awkwardness that resulted in some laughs and then some cringes as well. Make some remarks that definitely can be construed as inappropriate and racist. Not fired. Apparently his internship had already ended. The question is now his career ended?
Yeah.
I don't know. Your thoughts.
So here's the thing. I obviously spoke to that too on Reddit, but not everyone reads Reddit, and nor should they. And it was funny for me because one of the first things people said was like, wow, In Control's made racially charged jokes on stage. And what I should have said in my argument is, I'll tell you this, I have, and I've gotten away with it, and there's reasons for that, but that's not what I'm interested in. If I was to coach myself, I would tell you it's never worth it. The joke's never funny enough due to the risk. Like, I never said something
in my opinion, that was so terrible that I should be under fire. But what I would tell you is that it's actually a lightning rod you just shouldn't touch as a host or as someone on stage, even as a commentator. Like, it's just too dangerous. And I think that's what Terry experienced. If you don't have, like, a career, an established persona, and, like, the community knows who you are, if you make something that makes anyone uncomfortable through race or, like, making fun of sexual orientation or gender and stuff like this, you're probably going to burn really quick because you're not worth the investment of taking a risk on. Like, and that's what happened to Terry, and it was unfortunate because, like you said, he was gaining some notoriety and people were having fun with it, which is a whole other can of worms. Like, I don't know why people have fun with cringeworthy awkwardness. Like, I wouldn't want my production to like, we were the guys that had that guy that didn't belong there, and people kind of liked it, sort of. It's like, that's weird. But a funny comparison to me is, on the flip side, another person that had, like, their first gaming host experience was, I forget her name, but the sideline reporter for TI3.
Was it Casey?
Casey Atchison or something like that. Yeah. She was actually fucking amazing and one of the first people to ever step into the gaming world with zero experience at that kind of hosting, by the way. She's obviously got a lot of experience hosting and being a sideline reporter because that's what she does for a living for a major news network, but she actually floored it. So it was kind of funny to see the contrast where it's like, StarCraft has Terry, who's like gaining 1,000 Twitter followers by being bad and awkward. And then TI3 has Casey Atchison, who's an established sideline reporter, who's fucking crushing it in the gaming world right now because she's taking her skills and transitioning over. So I'm like, NASL, other leagues, follow this model.
Check it out.
You don't need a Playboy bunny and you don't need an awkward guy. You just need someone good at their job. Like, whoa. And on the year 2013, the gaming world figured out that if you hire someone good at their job, they'll do a good job.
So what do you so in regards to if his career is going to be able to continue, I mean, a lot of people were still really supportive of him on Reddit.
It sounded like, I mean, even the folks at chat are like, honestly, it was like cringe, but I think maybe even NASL made a bigger deal. Like, maybe they went on the PR offensive as far as that was concerned. And, I mean, I can understand that, right?
Because, was it really that bad, though?
Well, hey, but whether it was bad or not.
Said the sweet.
Whether
You'll
whether
never it, understand.
Whether it was bad or not, how have the community responded to other organizations that have hired people who have said things that they shouldn't have said?
They've gone through all the sponsors and required
right?
Them.
So, yeah. I mean, I wouldn't be surprised.
I'm thinking of Orb.
If maybe NASL like kind of was like, oh, we probably should be a little bit proactive about that.
They had to. I'm not going to drop names, but behind the scenes, basically Blizzard went to them and said, yo, you can't put him back on there, and you're going to have to explain why. And the only thing that was funny about that is, like, nobody knows how to handle that very well, and poor Frodan, like, my favorite part was he was like, all right, we got some great games coming up. Also, quick word, Terry the Intern won't be coming back anymore. NASL, Blizzard, and Red Bull do not agree with any of his opinions, and he'll be gone. More StarCraft. Commercial break. See you soon.
Stay with us.
And then they, like, cut to commercial, and it's like, oh, did he just get fired on air like that? Did that just happen? Like,
yeah. But, I mean, the only thing he said was, like, what was it? Like, he went
Thorsen.
To the black guy in the audience, and he said, like, I'm speaking with you to get some diversity. Or what did he say? Like,
yeah, that
with
was,
you being the only...
I feel like inside the game we're about to teach racism to a Swede, and this would take weeks to get you to appreciate. Like,
I mean, there's a difference between racism and... joke. Like, that wasn't even offensive. If I was
Thorsen,
in, I wouldn't take
I think
any offense.
That I do not believe, if what you're asking is, did Terry purposely make a malicious racial comment? The answer is no. That what happened was that several individuals made a decision based off of what he said. It was, I do not believe it was meant to be malicious by any means, but there was a reaction. You know, I mean, this has happened in traditional media before.
I think a lot of people, not everybody, but a lot of people who complain about this, they're like, kind of looking for something to complain about. They're like, oh, this is a golden opportunity to have someone, to make, to be a mean guy and to like have this guy fired. I'm like,
there are those people, Thorzane, but the way it works in the States is it only takes a couple of people that are actually legitimately hurt by comments like this that are supercharged from a history where they're sensitive to these kinds of things because they do experience segregation and racial prejudice for them to then say, I'm uncomfortable with the way this was handled and I don't like it. And with the way our culture is in the States, like they are held to high esteem because we've had this sensitive past. So when he goes to a black dude in the audience and does not mean anything bad by this at all, I don't think anyone in their right mind thought Terry was like, hey, I just want to do a quick note here. Does anybody else not like black people? And they're like, ah, like that wasn't what happened. Instead, what they did was he went over to the only black dude in the audience and was like, hey, I picked you for this question because you're the only dark-skinned person here. And then that guy, maybe he didn't feel uncomfortable, but he did look uncomfortable. He looked like, oh, shit, thank you. Thank you. I'm feeling really awkward now. And then people look into that, and then they feel awkward, and they feel uncomfortable, and now it's about race. And that's why it was not okay. And as a white guy, I can just say it's refreshing to see a Korean get charged with a racial bad situation. It's always the white people that get in trouble for that. And that's racist.
Anyway, Terry, good luck.
Oh, he's fine.
Yeah. Well, hopefully Artosis doesn't
tweet
him. He
was interning as like a, you know.
Yeah, someone, someone did see, yeah, did you see like Artosis says something like, I think Terry's got a really bright future.
That was Photoshop's all shit, but it was amazing.
Yeah. It's hilarious.
Fine. Just so people know, though, if it was ever questioned, and I don't think it was, he did not mean anything bad by it. That's the important thing. And I do think that's interesting for Europeans in general, but because they're not as sensitive about that stuff as we are, I feel, as Americans. But it was an American event with everyone running it and sponsoring was American, essentially. So they had to handle it that way. If that happens on the DreamHack stage, does the guy get fired? Probably not. In fact, I know it doesn't.
All right, why don't we – sorry, I'm just like – now people are like, you're blowing this out of proportion. Like, we're just reporting on actually what happened. Yeah. So
we're reporting on what was blown out of proportion, you dickwad. Yeah. Like.
All right, we are going to go to open phones in just a moment. But before we do, TI3 was this weekend. Obviously eclipsed the WCS regional finals. So I just ask you guys, what do you think Blizzard can learn for WCS from TI3? Anything like to take away from it? Just throwing it out there.
I think one of the coolest things that I took away from the TI3 is if you keep it, like, people are going to disagree with this, but let me be my normal long-winded self, and I do apologize. Keep it simple, stupid. Like, it was not the biggest laser show. It didn't have the most absolute gargantuan audience, although it was quite large, obviously. The analyst desk was filled with people that knew their shit. It was anchored by Tugut, who, by the way, deserves all the claps in the back. I thought he did an amazing job. I made jokes because it was like weird. He wasn't offensive or super mean at all that weekend. He was just an amazing host. And then they went to a rotation of commentators that were the best from the entire scene. Like every big name Dota commentator was there and had a piece. And then the games, of course, were magical. But for me, what I take away from this is that For BlizzCon to be successful, I don't need Black Sabbath carrying out innovation on a barge. You know, like, we don't need that. We need a good...
Are you sure?
Yeah, well, I mean, I won't say no if they do it. That'd be amazing. We need an analyst desk. They should copy the TI3, is basically what I'm saying. And they should just work on no blips, no downs. Twitch did a fucking awesome job this weekend. People were wondering if they could handle it.
Yeah,
they did.
Yeah, suck it, bitches. Suck it.
And just focus on the fact that if you put together a solid presentation, you don't have to reinvent the wheel. It just needs to be sound and tried and true, just like the TI3 did, and you will have a great show.
There really wasn't any gimmicks or anything. It was just completely solid, as Jeff said, and no downtime, which obviously, like, that's huge, I think. I think one of the biggest things about StarCraft is there's so much downtime in between all the matches, but... There was a long time in between matches, but you always had the analyst desks, which was awesome. And I think that would be cool if Blizzard, like, just decided to fly some of the players that didn't qualify for WCS just to send a couple players to be the analyst people. I think people would like to hear more of like the player perspective on things. I think that'd be pretty cool. Yeah.
They did a good job with it. Here's another thing, too, to get into the subtleties a little bit more. And I want to hear Wheat because he's a big production guy, too. But I liked that it didn't feel like the analyst. I liked that the analyst desk, kind of copying almost from the MLG model, was out. And you could hear people in the background, and there was kind of movement going on. As opposed to, I think back to a few of the other analyst desks we've had, like ESL. I want to say IPL even had some desks where it felt like the analysts were in another room, like a closet. And they're like, hey, guys, so we're here, and let's talk about Marine drops. You can see here the Marines came down. And is it on the screen? Okay. And the Marines came down, and pause the replay, resume, pause, times four, and then pause, go back, pause. So right here you can see the hatchery's about to die. And that's they didn't worry about that shit. They just had three great minds and two good discussing what we already saw. And then sometimes they'd cut back to the gameplay and talk about it, but they didn't worry about integrating touch screens and like people wait, you know. They kept it simple, is what I'm saying. It was really simple.
Yeah. I mean, like, you know, if anyone watched the entirety of TI3, and if you saw teams multiple times, you might be like, oh, well, I already saw this video. You know, when that's like the worst thing that you can say about the production overall, they did pretty fucking good. Like, there was, you know, the downtime was hardly any. The casters were, because of the because of the analysis desk, they were always pretty hype. They were on stage too, which I think adds the hype. If I'm not mistaken, the analyst desk was actually out sort of in the front lobby hall or before you actually entered in, which made it interesting as well. But we got a lot of calls coming in. Yes, they did a fantastic job. Someone in chat said, you know, obviously the biggest thing that Blizzard can take away is that don't schedule an event during fucking TI4. I gotta agree with them.
I think they know. I think they know.
I think they probably know too. You guys ready for a couple calls?
Yeah.
Yes.
All right. We're gonna take. You know what? Actually, let me just make sure that all these are set. If these guys are too loud, let me know. We're going to take this call first. All right, we've got Ben on the line. Hello, Ben. Welcome to Inside the Game. What's up? Oh, wait. I've got you muted. James. All right, Ben, I'm going to try this one more time. Hello, welcome to Inside the Game. What's up?
Jeff.
Yo.
Jeffrey. I'm still waiting for that San Francisco bar crap, buddy.
I know, man.
I called last week, and there's been no action on this. I control. No, I'm just kidding.
Didn't we try to bomb Alex Garfield about that last week? Right?
We did.
I'll keep trying, man. I want it too. Believe me.
Anything else, Ben? Or is this just like the weekly reminder?
Nope. Just keeping it on the calendar.
All right, man.
All right. Thank you.
I appreciate it. You know what? I gotta appreciate the guy's, consistency. Being persistent is sometimes the best way to get things done, I suppose. All right. Area code 845, hello. Welcome to Inside the Game. What's up?
What's going on, guys? Thanks for taking my call.
Thanks for calling.
Yeah, thank you for calling.
DJ Weed, it's good to talk to you again. I actually called into 8Bits one time, so thanks for taking my call again. I actually have a question for the three gamers you have on the show tonight. It's not really esports related, more just general physical conditioning, I guess, but I have a real problem when I'm on summer break right now between semesters, and I have an issue when I play, you know, games for too long where, like, I don't know if it's my posture or something, maybe my chair is just not good, but, like, my back just starts to really kill. And I've been to chiropractor, I've been all over the place, and, like, I do different things to try to fix that, but I was just wondering if you guys had any tips or advice on, like, besides just taking breaks frequently throughout the day, what do you do to alleviate if you ever experienced this, like, really bad back pain while you play? Like, I mean, I feel like the physical side of esports, nobody really discusses. Everybody always talks about, you know, hand speed, stuff like that. But, like, just being in front of your computer for hours on end can be really detrimental to your health if you're not careful. So I was wondering if you had anything, you know, you'd comment on that.
Yeah, I feel like I'm the poster boy for that. So I'll just do my – I've been talking a lot, so I'll just get out real quick. Make sure you're walking around and standing up every 2 hours. Like, don't sit for long periods of time. That's my piece. The other guys can talk about their thing.
I'm just going to say, yeah, I mean, you did mention your chair shortly, but I think it is really key to have a good chair. And this is where I'd point to In Control. You should get a DX Racer chair. Very nice. And, yeah, very good. That is a great picture right there. And the other thing, yeah, like getting up and walking, I just like to reemphasize the physical aspect part of it, like going to the gym as often as you can, you know, even just doing any exercises for your backs, but like just like being physically active in general just always makes or is always beneficial, I think. So I think if that's one thing you can look for to improve on, I think that's a good thing to look at.
Yeah, probably just what the other guy said. I personally haven't really had any issues with my back specifically. I have had issues with my shoulder, though. And it's always been when I've been playing for a very long time without breaks. The times where I take breaks, I don't really feel anything. So I think, as you already knew, taking breaks is good. Other than that, I have no real advice.
It's funny because whenever we get on this subject, I always feel like those 1980s athlete commercials where they're like, hey, kids, eat apples and make sure and exercise. And people are like, thanks, Mike. And he's like, no problem, kids. And he, like, takes off to the stars as a bald eagle. Like, it sounds cheesy when we say this, but it's actually true. If you're Thor's just complaining about shoulder hurting. That's actually a big artosis injury that he had. One of the things he found is check the level of your chair-to-desk ratio. Like, if you're... Yeah. If your shoulders are low and they're not resting, you're inducing stress on your shoulder joints. So maybe either lower your chair or raise your desk. Make sure you're resting at a more equal length. Obviously, your arms aren't straight out like this, but not too terribly low. And then as Suppy said, like actually get out and exercise, because if you do play this game for 10 hours a day, you need to understand that is far and away obscene, stagnant life. Like that's you're very... much so not moving around enough. So you have to be moving around and check your levels.
Mm-hmm. And someone in chat also mentioned something that might be useful is your monitor height. I think Gexor mentioned that. So that's another thing you could look into. Lots of different factors you could look into.
Yeah.
Hopefully that helps, man.
Oh, okay. Yeah, no, thanks a lot. It's great, great stuff. Yeah, I just wanted to say, DJ Wheat, I love all your shows. You make amazing content. You're great.
Thank you,
sir.
Team.
In Control, you're probably the best, besides D9, one of the best ambassadors for StarCraft. I just thank you for everything you're doing. Thorzane, you're the true king of the North. Keep going on, man. And Suppy, I love what you're doing with the CSL. So thanks a lot, guys, for taking my call.
Thanks, man. Appreciate it.
Besides D9.
Fucking Circle Jerk City. Goddamn, dude. No, I'm just kidding. Thanks a lot for your call, man. I appreciate it. All right, let's take another one. We got area code 248. Hello, welcome to Inside the Game. What's up?
Hey, guys, how's it going?
It's going, man.
Good.
Hey, first of all, I wanted to mention, I thought Red Bull did a really great job hosting that event. I actually emailed them afterwards, and I got a response, which is kind of cool. You know, they seem to really appreciate the esports fans as well, as much as the, you know, the players in the community does. I just had a question because... and no one does this, so it's obvious, it's probably a terrible idea. But, you know, in late-game Zerg, they make a lot of spine crawlers, they make a lot of spore crawlers, but since queens get picked off later on, especially TVZ, why don't Zergs make, I mean, when they have a huge bank, make, like, 10 hatcheries? Is it just because they don't have the room for them, or is it just because it just... isn't viable, but like it's not enough benefit to use the drones for that later in the game.
Suppy?
Yeah, I could take this. What really, I think, I mean, one thing that actually does happen a lot is people do use queens. They grab all their queens with high energy because of misinjects, pull them into their army, and then remake queens, and then just use those queens for transfuses. But I think you're saying that maybe people should just stop making queens and replace them with mass hatcheries. And in regards to that, I feel like it's definitely something you can do, but I don't think it's really that necessary. It is 300 minerals, but the main thing is larva in late game ZVT is not as important as it is in maybe mid game or something, because late game you get really, really high supply cost units like broodlords, like ultralisks, all those types of units that don't really require that much larva. So you're not really, really limited by your ability to make units by your larva. It's more so you don't really need those extra hatcheries. I don't know if that answers your question.
One thing that's kind of close to what you're saying, though, that I do like is I think Zerg should start adding a second macro hatch, which is something that we're seeing a little bit more of. But like it's very common for a Zerg on four bases to have five hatcheries, whereas some of these guys that are doing more Ling-heavy compositions, we're seeing a sixth hatch between the four bases, actually, which I really like. I'm a big fan of that.
All right, fair enough. Thanks, guys. Love the show.
Thank you very much. Right. Take care.
Thanks.
All right. Actually got quite a few coming in. All right, let's take this one. He's been trying to call in for a while. All right, we got Alex on the line. Hello, Alex. Welcome to Inside the Game.
Hey, guys. Thank you for accepting my call.
No problem, man.
And thank you for being at Red Bull Battlegrounds in Orlando, or Training Grounds. I was there.
Right on.
That was good.
Hopefully you enjoyed yourself.
Yeah, I did. I went all 3 days. I didn't plan on going on Sunday because I had work, but fuck work.
Yeah, future generation, fuck work, yeah. All right, what's up?
So my question was, and I'm going to try and explain this without fucking up and stumbling over myself.
All right.
That happens a lot on this show, it seems like.
You just raised expectations really high, man.
No, I think I can do it.
Okay.
So my question is, with all this talk about potential, like, I don't agree with it, about the talk of StarCraft 2 quote-unquote dying, blah, 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 and people talking about how great of a game Brood War was, how do you think Brood War would do now, if it came out now, with, like, and it had some sort of fan base already? It's a very hard game. Everyone here has played Brood War. It doesn't have all the features that some of these other games, like Dota, have. So do you think it would be as big? Do you understand my question?
Yeah. Here's the thing. At face value, to answer your question, the answer is no. Like, if you release StarCraft/Brood War with the graphic settings it had, the UI...
Well, I don't mean the graphic settings, obviously. Like,
okay, so that's what you say. Sure. Let's raise the graphics to StarCraft 2 level, okay? Let's even the playing field.
Yeah.
Still no. I mean, I guess in this weird hypothetical world, Brood War had currently not been released, so in that sense it would be new. And if they did find a way to make the engine operate the way it did in Brood War, where things don't bunch up nearly as much, and you literally just ported over all the stats and all the units from Brood War into StarCraft 2... I guess in that strange hypothetical world, yeah, Brood War would do just fine because there wouldn't be StarCraft 2 and there hadn't been Brood War, and it would be the best RTS. It's not like StarCraft 2 uniquely brings in this super exciting gameplay that eclipses anything Brood War ever could have done. Brood War was the better game in terms of challenge, and it was the at least maybe equal, if not better, in terms of excitement as well, but... If you talk about a world where there is StarCraft II: Heart of the Swarm, and then they're like, "We brought back Brood War," no, it wouldn't do. It wouldn't replace StarCraft II.
Okay, I guess what came to my mind was because Brood War, people could argue that it's a much harder and difficult game to get into. So that's what was going through my head. In a lot of StarCraft fans, this game should be more like Brood War in difficulty. Idra's said that many times.
Okay, so that's a really interesting thing you bring up because I like that. I actually, and we if we had hours to talk about this, we should. 8-Bit might even discuss this at some point, but games these days, I saw a really cool picture of Skyrim compared to Morrowind and Oblivion. And in Morrowind, the map of this cave was super intricate with 50 NPCs, an insane map. Then they had Oblivion where it was pretty complex. Still, you could go different places. Then they had Skyrim, which was point A, point B, a linear single path. And that's because, in this day and age, games are getting easier because they want more accessibility to a larger base of people to buy the game, hence Call of Duty versus Counter-Strike. And it wouldn't make sense to just all of a sudden drop the fucking Battletoads of RTS and be like, hey kids, here's a game that you can't play for shit, and you're gonna suck at. But there's gonna be 1 in 10,000 of you that'll play it pretty good, and you'll get to then watch and appreciate the guys that master this game. This is not the climate for that. StarCraft II right now is one of the hardest games to play, and you'll still hear people say, I tried out StarCraft, it was too hard, and Brood War was 10 times harder.
Yeah, and I called him a long while ago actually asking about how Call of Duty was an easier game, so it was maybe ruining FPS. If a harder FPS was to come out, people would not try it. Like, that was a long time. Like, that was almost a year ago. So I doubt any of you guys would remember that. But yeah, that explains a lot of what I was wondering about.
Yeah, man.
Anyone else have any comments on that before I let the caller go?
I think Jeff answered it pretty well. I think along the same lines.
Yeah. So yeah, thank you guys. Thank you, Base God, and I love you guys.
Thanks, dude.
All right.
See you.
All right. This one looks to be in my backyard. We got area code 402. Hello, welcome to Inside the Game. What's up?
Hey, thanks for taking my call.
Of course.
I just wanted to ask, question or more just bring up kind of a point of view when you guys were talking about the balance patches, the new balance changes they were talking about this week.
Sure, the balance suggestions, yeah.
Yeah. So, I see a lot of people saying, like, oh, well, the balance is really good right now, so why are they suggesting these changes, and why are they buffing only two races? I guess my kind of thought is they've talked a lot with Heart of the Swarm about how they want to try and make mech playable in Terran versus Protoss. So the way I see it is, like, it looks to me like they're trying to buff mech, get that into the Terran versus Protoss matchup, and then because Terran versus Zerg is, you know, I think David Kim mentioned in that blog that they see that being kind of even right now. If they're buffing mech, that's going to affect that matchup as well, so they've got to give some buffs to Zerg. So maybe that's why they're buffing the Viper to help make sure that mech doesn't become too strong against Zerg. I just wondered if maybe you guys thought that maybe that was kind of the approach they were going for, or if, like, it makes more sense that way, or just kind of get your guys' thoughts on that.
I think in Wings of Liberty, mech was viable against against Terran and against Zerg, but now in Heart of the Swarm, mech isn't even, like, good against Zerg anymore. Like, it's pretty bad, to be honest. So I think buffing mech wouldn't make it hard for Zerg to beat. Like, this change wouldn't make mech at all imbalanced against Zerg, because it's really quite weak as it is. So I don't think that they would need to buff the Viper to compensate.
Well, they were pretty vague about what they were actually going to buff with mech, too. They just said they wanted to do something.
Well, they mentioned,
I think
about
he referred
the upgrades.
To the upgrade change.
Yeah.
I think the big problem like Thorzane said, like, I think the big problem with mech in Heart of the Swarm is that Zerg just consistently has free units to throw at you, like, in every stage of the game now, whereas before it was just Broodlords. Now what you see people countering mech with is with Swarm Hosts, and for example, when I play mech, I don't even make Vipers. You make Vipers if you're going to go Roach Hydra to counter mech, but if you just go Swarm Hosts, you don't even need Vipers. You just use the Swarm Host by yourself until you get Broodlords, and you have Broodlord Swarm Host, which, both of which give free units and, like, slowly kill the mech army, and the mech army moves around so slowly that you're still fine because your army is really small as well, or really slow as well. So yeah, I'm not sure if that answers the question or not.
Well, I guess what I'm trying to say is, like, do you think that maybe their objective isn't to get mech viable in Terran versus Zerg, and maybe their objective is to try and make mech viable against Protoss, and they just want to make sure that that doesn't affect the TBZ matchup.
Can they specifically say that the Viper change was to aid against Protoss?
I think that's the intention of it.
Actually, the true wording on the article says that we don't know yet whether we want to increase the rate of Viper spells. So maybe what they're saying in general is that the Viper is just kind of underutilized, and that is one of the reasons why they would do that thing. They talk about, I guess they don't say anything specifically, any matchup. They don't mention anything.
Okay.
With the Viper change specifically. For the mechs changes, they do say, right now it's looking, the only area where Terran might be weak is late game PVT, but it's debatable, is what they, you know, set that one up with. So... anyway, final.
All right. Do you guys think that it will help make mech viable in Terran versus Protoss at all? This upgrade combination change?
Thorzane?
Mm, I don't really know. Like, you don't usually, if you play mech, you don't really transition into air.
It kind of helps, like, even if you had Colossus, speed. But it's not like Colossus are the big issue in mech play, TVP, you know?
Yeah, I guess, yeah, you would. Your Vikings would be better against Colossi. Maybe if you could do some kind of pseudo air mech, like Thor Banshee, and, like, get super upgrades on both of them. Not necessarily Thor Banshee, but, like, something along those lines.
I think the short answer, though, is no. Like, I think, and I would agree with Thor's, and I would say that I don't know that this upgrade buff makes it, like, all of a sudden, Terrans are like, finally! Now I can mech TVP. It's always going to be that warp-in mechanic is super strong, the warp prism is super strong in that matchup, charge lots in general, just counterattacking. Like, it's always been an immobility issue, which I felt was more of a map balance thing as opposed to the matchup itself. Some Terrans can make mech work, and I do like, by the way, we saw Bomber utilize it against Rain. It actually looked sick, but he forgot to make Ghosts when he did it. Ghost mech play is actually pretty cool for timing attacks. It's not super sustainable for a long game, because like I said, Protoss just kind of chips you away until you die, but it's kind of cool for timing attacks. That 2 or 3 base timing attack is pretty cool.
All right. Caller, thank you very much.
Thanks, guys.
Midwest
Appreciate
represent.
It.
Take you. Care. Bye. All right. we're going to cut the lines here for a second. We got the one and only calling in. Oh, wait. He was. There we go. All right, ladies and gentlemen, to help us wrap up the show, as he always does on Inside the Game. Welcome, Goat Lust. Hello, sir. Woo. Gentlemen.
Oh,
hello.
G'day, yeah. G'day, gents. How are we?
I'm fucking great.
How are you?
I'm good.
Bloody beautiful.
Yes.
Bloody fucking beautiful.
Do you play Dota?
Nah, mate, nah. Oh, no. My friend gave me a beta key about a year ago, and I installed it, and I looked at the UI, and I said, you know what? I've played a bit of League of Legends, and, like, I could honestly not be fucked learning new champions and all that sort of shit. You know, so...
Gotcha. All right, I was just curious.
So, yeah, you couldn't be fucked.
So you got to watch some StarCraft this weekend, then?
I sure did, mate.
Good. Good. All right, yeah. Well, what...
Just enjoying that, tacked-on show on GOM TV. Watching Tysus and Artosis, you know?
Oh, yeah.
World of Tanks, oh, yeah. That's good.
Yeah. What do you got for the host this week?
Well, it's a bit of a timely question, with it being sort of a doom and gloom week for us. But I'm just wondering what you guys think about StarCraft in the current climate of esports, because it sort of seems like people are really worried about, you know, having a great game to watch. But it seems like the biggest recipe for success in the current esports model is having, you know, a free-to-play game, so you've got a big player base. And then you've got to have microtransactions so that there's some reason for the developer to pump a fuck ton of money into the esports side of the game. Because, you know, with a one-time purchase sort of model that Blizzard's got, it's not like if you're really invested in the game, you're going to be able to spend more straight into Blizzard.
Very good point.
Yeah, what do you guys think?
What I think briefly is, I think Blizzard did mention that I feel like esports is not their primary, I mean, it's not really their primary focus with this game, I feel like. Whereas for Dota and League of Legends, those are the primary focuses. Blizzard has mentioned where most of the revenue, or pretty much, I mean, they get way more revenue, at least so they say, from selling the campaign and selling the game to people who just play the campaign, because the vast majority of people buy the game only to play single player. Mm-hmm. So they've never really looked at esports as their primary focus. That said, I feel like it would be really, really smart of them to actually adopt that business model and maybe do, you have the free-to-play multiplayer and you have a standalone campaign that you can sell and you can have the microtransactions. I think maybe that could be an option. I don't know. What do you guys think?
Thorzane, before I get super long-winded?
Yeah, me too.
No? The question was why Blizzard don't focus more on esports, like money wise.
Sorry, he's in a League of Legends game. Can you restate the question?
So I was just asking what you thought of the current climate of esports, where it seems like the recipe for success is having a free-to-play game with a large player base and then microtransactions so you can continue to get money out of people over a period of time instead of the one-time purchase model.
I'm not really into the... Like, I don't really know anything about that kind of business, so I don't really have anything to say. Like, it seems to be working very well for League of Legends and Dota and World of Tanks, and I don't really know what kind of games use that, but... I don't know, to be honest. Like, I don't really have any opinion.
Okay. So jumping in there, first of all, like this conversation comes up a lot, and it's a good conversation because it's something that I think it's really interesting for me. People talk about the free-to-play model, and you can hear Suppy saying, like, I think they should move towards that. And there's a lot of people that share that opinion. I'm of the personal opinion that whether they do or not, like, one of the ways that esports should be looked at, and I feel like how it's treated, and it's why WCS is there, and it's why Blizzard does pump money into a game that they otherwise are not, like, their investment in StarCraft will help sell Legacy the Avoid, of the Avoid. That's kind of a funny way to say it. Legacy of the Void, but it's not like they're helping their hot sales that much. Certainly not in relation to how much money they're putting into esports. But what esports does for me, and what I've seen it do for companies in the past, is it creates name brand loyalty, and it creates intangible returns. They end up being tangible returns, but they. You don't feel them like when, like, by paying for a WCS, you don't then sell 100,000 units of Heart of the Swarm, right? That's rarely how it works. But what it does for me is that I'm like, wow, Blizzard has my back. They make the best game. They support it. I'm going to buy Diablo 3 when they shit that game out, and it was a shit. And I'm going to buy the next game they buy because I trust in Blizzard and I love Blizzard. And that's what esports does. There's this other model that LoL and Dota has, which is direct returns on those investments, and that's to be honored and that's to be respected, but I don't feel like people should look at that as the only way a publisher can make money, a developer can make money in the scene while using esports, because I don't agree with that. So moving forward, I don't think we're ever going, like, I don't see BlizzCon having a million concurrent viewers, and if anyone thinks it's possible, that's really stupid. It's not going to happen for our game. It doesn't have that kind of player base or that audience. But if we hit 150,000, 175,000 at BlizzCon, which is doable, which is possible, I think that's a resounding victory. It's the number one RTS. It's one of the most complex games in the world, and people are tuning in those kind of numbers to watch it. And that audience, by the way, is connected to Dota and LoL, but largely in part separate as well. Whereas, conversely, I feel like a higher percentage of LoL or Dota people do watch StarCraft because they find that entertaining too, but not quite as much the other way around. But I'm getting off subject. I guess the point I'm trying to say is I think people should be happier with smaller numbers, but different, and that those numbers do translate into longevity for Blizzard. And that's why it's worth investing. And that's why when representatives of Blizzard come out and say esports is not our main objective, that should have been a no-duh moment, but it also shouldn't hurt anyone's feelings because Blizzard is investing in esports. They're just saying it's not their... They don't have delusions of grandeur where it's like, we put on WCS and all of a sudden we're crushing COD. It's not going to happen.
Yeah, you know, the other thing too is like, so I don't think there's a successful formula yet for esports, right? No one knows it. What Riot is doing, what Valve has been doing, like this is all new ideas. It might be built off of historical ideas. For example, I think League of Legends is very similar to the CGS, the Championship Gaming Series, that tried to take four games and put them all together and put it on TV and go. But, you know, I think it's that LCS for Riot, they've like sort of taken that model and they said, how can we change it, work it into our game better, and go with it? You know, StarCraft II was, you know, still to this day, I believe, sort of a victim of its own success. You know, look at other games and other communities in comparison to StarCraft II with, say, community shows. For example, there are actually a fuck ton of StarCraft community shows, man. Find me another community where there are more community shows than StarCraft 2, and I'll be shocked. Like, I still don't quite understand that. Like, League of Legends, Dota, they both do have some community efforts, but not nearly as many as, like, what we're seeing in StarCraft. I think that part of that was with Street Fighter 4 and StarCraft 2 coming out and esports sort of getting that, like, fifth wind since, you know, 2006. People got really excited. A lot of people started making content about it, where the other explosions have been more on the tournament side. You know, I still think that these games are going to be able to benefit once someone goes, fuck, man. Yeah, there's actually a market for, like, some League of Legends shows, for some Dota shows, because not many people are doing it. But with that, the community side, while they've been killing it, Blizzard has absolutely been struggling with how they turn this into something that benefits them, their company, their brand, their game, maybe sales in the future. Like, partially, first off, I don't know what they do. I think they're still trying to figure it out. But I do believe that there is some truth to the fact that because, like, Capcom with Street Fighter 4 and Blizzard with StarCraft 2, they came out of the gate into a sort of untrekked territory. They were actually going to be the first one to make mistakes because this was, like,
sure,
new territory being put on. Like, anyone else that came after those two, they could immediately go, okay, well, not only do we have, like, 10 years of historical esports data, but we've also got, like, this big explosion that's happened over the last year and a half. There is a reason why around 09, into 10, when the StarCraft beta was coming out, and fuck, there were already tournaments and different shows that were popping up and stuff. That's when Riot said, we actually need a spectator mode for our game. Up to that point, they didn't even have it. You know, so there was, there is still an uphill climb for Blizzard in that regard. That's, you know, I feel like I could probably keep talking about this particular subject.
It's a big subject,
for ages,
yeah.
But I think it's a good question. And I want to just go back real quick to something that Jeff said, right? There used to be, like, there are two top esports games. Now there's, like, there are three. Or four or five. And pretty soon, Jeff's right, there's going to be, like, a top 10 esports games. And I think that everyone's goal should just be, like, you know, stay on that list. Because think about it, guys. Like, 1,000 games come out every year. 100 of them try to be big multiplayer games. Most of them are never going to make it to that list. That's already a pretty fucking big accomplishment. So, by any means, the fact that you can have any sort of successful run in esports, that means that someone has done something right. I do believe that there's a lot to work on, but just sort of my two cents about it.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Word. All right.
All right.
Good question, man.
Thank you very much, gentlemen.
Thank you.
Thank you, Goatlust. Right,
catch you next week.
See you, Goatlust.
Thank you. All right. That's the show, you guys. 80 episodes. Holy
GG.
Fuck.
Is that 80?
This is episode 80.
Man.
I know, right?
Who do you think our Terran host will be when we hit 100? Like, who are we going
to... Alright. Let's do our wraps. Let's do our wraps. Ten Hut, we're going to start with EG's Thorzane.
Gentleman Thorzane.
Gentleman
Thorzane. Oh, yeah. Why, thank you, Gentleman Suppy.
Can we keep this? I really like it. I'm not even lying. Like, it sounds so funny.
We're sophisticated now. We're not just...
I like that. Yeah. I like that. People are like, hey, you need to be more professional for StarCraft to grow. So we're just going to use Gentleman more. Okay, Gentleman?
It's inside the Gentleman.
Yeah.
Not even
okay,
gaming.
So I'm sorry I couldn't make it the last week. I think it was the last week when I didn't participate in the show. But I heard that Libo did a great job. So I guess it wasn't that bad. And then, yeah, I'll be streaming like for the rest of the week. Actually, I won't because I will be leaving Sweden tomorrow. But I'll be streaming when I get back for like a week or so. And make sure to tune in at twitch.tv/Thorzane. You can follow me at Twitter. I'm EGThorzane, one word. And obviously, a big shout out to EG and all of our sponsors, Monster Energy, King's Knife X, Razer, Astro, XMG, SAM, Need for Seed. And your turn, Gentleman Suppy.
Oh, thank you, Gentleman Thorzane. great reading of our sponsors there. Once again, always huge thanks to all our sponsors for making this possible. And thank you guys for watching and tuning in and listening to our ramblings. You can follow me on Twitter at EGSuppy, and I've been streaming quite a bit recently at twitch.tv/SuperiorWolf. And also, you can find me at some upcoming events, Landhammer this weekend in San Francisco. So if you're in the area, you should definitely...
Go take away his golden cup, folks. Shit.
Not that one.
That's the other one.
Oh,
that's the other
damn
one.
Damn it. You don't
that's
get
at the
a
end
cold...
of the month.
Oh, fuck. Yeah. God, we'll still don't let Suppy get that golden cup.
Yeah, he'll put it next to his name if he wins that, for sure. Like, that's not even a question.
Tradition, man.
We'll advertise for it next time it comes out and stuff. And
okay, something else. I'm doing this like StarCraft 2 Summer Survivor show that's going to be airing episode 2 on Friday. So if you guys are interested in that, and a couple things, I just want to say I'm really excited to see the WCS finals. I think there's a lot of great storylines. For example,
when
Will
is that,
Jadon.
By the way?
10 days. Yeah.
10 days. Which that soon?
23rd.
I think there's some interesting storylines. Will Jadon be able to finally get his final victory? Will the Foreigners, Scarlet, Grubby, Naniwa, Welmu, Jim, will they be able to carry the Foreigner torch? Will we see all 8 Protoss, round of 8? And will Artosis make any more predictions? I'm very excited, so I hope you guys are
too.
As well. Yeah, he will make some predictions.
Is he going to say Polt and then, you know... I don't know.
Who does he fanboy that's there? I'm hoping he avoids Jadon. I hope he's like, you know, Jadon's results have been slipping, and then we're like...
Good sign.
Who does he fanboy about? I mean, I guess he'll be fanboying about Maru and Innovation, so they're doomed. They're not going to win a fucking game over there.
But I'm wondering if he realizes that his... Like, is he ever going to realize it and, like, the people he cheers for and then just cheer for the other person?
No. Nope.
On purpose?
Nope. He laughs it off because he wants it to go away, but it really bothers him. he's a very scientific guy, so whenever people are like, oh, curse, he's like, yeah, guys, there's a mythical power that I have to control who wins or loses. But it was annoying to him, but now it's getting to like the powerful, like,
oh,
he like,
God.
I brought it up on SC2L, like, I was like, any predictions, Arctosis? And he's like, yeah, all right, moving on, like, thanks, Jeff, like... He knows.
All right. And on to you, Gentleman Jeff.
Thank you, Gentleman Suppy. SC2L will continue tomorrow at 7 p.m. PDT. That's 1 hour from now. I'm casting with Day 9. I don't know who we're casting, but that is something you guys can check out. And with WCS simmering down a little bit, it should be great. You should check us out. It's a great broadcast when it happens. And then Thursday is episode 100 of State of the Game, and that is me, JP, Noni, Day 9, and we're doing it live in San Francisco. I've been made aware that Alaska Distillery sent us 30/5 of hard alcohol. Obviously, we're not going to drink all of that because I think that would kill a rhinoceros.
Pussy! God!
We'll do our best.
It's the 100th episode of State of the Game. Why don't you fucking show some respect to the community that's taken it that far, Jeff?
All right.
And if you don't do every single one of your impressions on the show, then fuck you too. I better see you drink 10 of those things. Fuck.
Oh, my God. anyways, yes. So there's that. Obviously, big shout out to EG. And then, you know what? I feel like the cat's out of the bag enough. So I'm going to put this out there because hopefully... this can simmer down. Like, Alex has changed his Facebook about it. He's tweeted and stuff.
Yes. Alliance is managed by Alex Garfield.
What?
EG. Yes.
Oh my god.
Yes. So this
and
is my
life.
We
didn't even get to know.
Like, here's
and
here's
you the, have to tell me this.
I know. I know. I'm sorry.
Here, oh yeah, my god! I'm so angry right
last
now.
Last piece missing. So here's. Let me just catch.
Whoa! 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 Wait! Whoa, wait! I just realized I have a replacement Protoss then. Oh.
Hey,
right,
I would like to
right
see
no,
Nanny.
No, 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 no. Think about it.
Okay.
Anyways,
actually, that could make for
this,
a quite interesting show.
It would be. You guys would be so passive. Actually, it would be pretty overt, I would imagine. But anyways, so it's like not a secret at all. It was meant to be kind of a secret at the beginning, but then it fell on its face so hard that it was like, well, okay, cat's out of the bag. But the reason I'm saying this is because every time, like every I kid you not, all weekend long, I'm like, go Alliance, and then 10 tweets. Oh, yeah? EGEU? Huh? Like, guys, like, it wasn't my secret. It's actually, it doesn't hurt my feelings. It's not funny. I don't know. Just stop, please. The best example I can have is, like, I grew up with a little brother, Colby. Shout out to Colby. But when he thought something was funny, he didn't give a fuck if nobody else thought it was funny. He would just keep saying it. And I would beat him up because I want him to stop. But I can't do that to the internet. So, guys, stop. Like, please. Total biscuit. I'm like, this weekend, it was something like, we were talking about Dark Heresy, and it was like, oh, total biscuit, I'll go to war with you on Warhammer lore. And he's like, well, control, you're getting used to being in second place now, aren't you? And I'm like, no, like, we just had a big win this weekend. He's like, ah, right, so Alliance is owned by EG. And it's like, yes, and it's pretty well known and terribly hidden. So let's put this out on the internet, and let's calm down about it. And then let's move on. But last thing I want to say is I actually just got an email from the Warhammer guys, and they created a Twitter. I think they actually created a Twitter like a year ago, but he didn't know that there's a value to Twitter.
We've
so he's just
started using it.
Under my tutelage, he's starting to look into it. So if you don't mind, if you have any inclination towards Warhammer at all and you're interested in it, follow Reese Robbins on Twitter or Frontline Gaming, and it's just this. I'll type it into the chat. But part of what I told them is I'm this big deal in StarCraft, and I was like, I'll get you a bunch of Twitter followers. So guys, you got to help me look like less of a jackass right now. There it is, Reese Robbins, and I'll tweet him after the show as well myself and ask for followers for him. But again, if you have any inclination at all towards Warhammer, give him a follow. And if you want stuff painted or business-wise, contact him. That's your own thing. But let's get him 1,000 Twitter followers and make me look awesome. Or at least less like a douche. Please help me. Thank you.
Well, since this is all about, you know, I guess, pushing our passions.
Yes.
I would like you to go on over, because unfortunately Garth Ennis doesn't have a Twitter, but I love this guy, and he writes some of the most fucked up, twisted comic books that you will ever read, and it's all fucking great.
Isn't that
so you know what? You go on over to Avatar Press, who's one of the best comic graphic novel publishing companies just ever. They are so good. You will read shit that will change your life because it's so fucking sick and twisted. Just at Avatar Press, keep up the good shit.
That's Preacher, right, Ennis?
What? Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, that was Vertigo, but now he does, like, you know, doing Crossed and a bunch of other good shit.
It is fucked up, though. He does do some.
It's so good. It's so good. Guys, we've got Live on 3 tomorrow. Be streaming this weekend as well. Thank you for joining us with another episode of Inside the Game, and we'll see you next week for episode 81. I think that's all we got. We're out of here. We'll see you next time. Peace.
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 Peace, gentlemen.
Peace, gentlemen.
Peace, gentlemen.